This is the Michael K. Show.
The Yankees do indeed sign DJ LeMahieu to a six-year contract and $90 million. That's $15 million a year, which is shocking to me. DJ LeMahieu got a $3 million raise. The Yankees are going to stay under the $210 million threshold. The Yankees have $20 million to play with. To get pitching, they could get Corey Kluber. They can maybe bring back Tanaka. Get them both. All of a sudden, your rotation doesn't look as bad as you think it looks now. So obviously, 6 years is too long to give to a 32-year-old. But I'm shocked that the Yankees got DJ LeMahieu at an average annual value of $15
million. The Michael K. Show.
I'm so annoyed with both DJ LeMahieu and the Jets. I want to talk about real football, playing, teams that win.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Ah, yes. Welcome back to the show. Big show today. This portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Two by London. That's the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit Two by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. Great people, and they treat you well as well. Another great person is Mike Tannenbaum, and he joins us now. We have a lot of questions for him. Mike, how you doing today?
Good to be with you guys. How's everybody?
Everybody's great. Did the Jets do well in hiring Robert Saleh?
Absolutely. And I think really, Michael, it starts fundamentally with a good process. You know, just hearing from the agent community, talking to a lot of people around the league, they ran a very thorough process. They cast a wide net. It was a very collaborative process. When you talk to the candidates that went through there, they were all pleased with how it went. And I think what the Jets got was somebody that's going to invigorate the franchise with a lot of enthusiasm. And hopefully now this will be a destination where people feel good about going there, because when you have players like the Jamal Adams of the world that want to leave, that's really what you want, is the opposite. You want someone like Robert Saleh, who's attracting those players where they're drafted. They want to come, they want to stay. And hopefully this is a transformational event for the franchise.
And, you know, the previous two hires have been outside consultants, basically, whether it's Peyton Manning, whether it's Casserly or Wolf. This feels like this was done the old school way, that Joe Douglas was the one that really put the work in. Sure, he got the help, but this feels like a Jet hire more than like asking for help outside the organization.
Yeah, Don, I think that's right. And I think what you have is, you know, three people at the helm of the franchise between Joe Douglas, Jaime Elhaj, the president, and Chris Johnson, the owner, that obviously, you know, there's good chemistry and they went through a great process and they think they got their right guy. And, you know, I know going back a while ago, but when Woody Johnson and I went through the process and got Rex Ryan, it was very similar. It was a tight-knit group, and, you know, we asked for people's input at the appropriate time and got what we felt was the right hire. And I think in this situation, this is someone that's really respected by a bunch of players, by a bunch of coaches. Like, when you ask around the league, it's very positive. And one thing in particular that I would tell you that was impressive, guys, when you look at the performance this year, for example, fifth in the league in defensive efficiency or fourth in third down defense, and to do that without Dee Ford or Nick Bosa or another starter in Jarski Tart, like, that is hard to do. To have sustainability and success when you're missing your best players really speaks to a coach that can coach and develop backups, and that's very impressive.
All right, so it was said when we kind of figured that Gase was done, they got to come in with an offensive guy that is either going to straighten out Sam Darnold or the next quarterback they pick. They went with a defensive guy. Is there a negative angle to that, Mike?
Well, I would just give that a grade of incomplete. And hopefully what we're talking about in the years to come is Robert Saleh, the head coach. You know, Bill Belichick was a defensive guy. Bill Parcells was a defensive guy. And my point, Michael, is like, certainly you're going to come in with an expertise, but it's really about how he scales leadership and who he hires. And one name, and I don't know if this is going to happen, but you look at a guy named Michael LaFleur, the younger brother of Matt LaFleur, the head coach of the Packers. I think it's much more important about the scheme they run, and specifically when you look at that 49er offense, the Kyle Shanahan, where a lot of boots, a lot of waggles, getting the quarterback outside the pocket, where the run game's tied to the passing game. I think, in my opinion, guys, that really plays well to Sam Darnold's strength, which is athletic, very accurate on the run. Kind of some of the things we're seeing out of Baker Mayfield right now. Baker Mayfield has one interception in the last 10 games. That's progress. That's what you're looking for if you're a Jet fan. So to me, you may kill two birds with one stone. If you hire a guy, again, like Mike LaFleur, now you keep Sam Darnold. Boy, that second pick guy becomes a lot more interesting.
Is that how you think it'll play out, that they'll trade that pick or go elsewhere rather than take a quarterback?
I do. You know, it's funny. A week ago, I was at the national championship game, and I'm driving to the stadium thinking, like, all right, are the Jets going to draft Justin Fields or keep Sam Darnold? And I left the stadium thinking, like, oh, my God, they got to draft Devontae Smith. So I think you keep Darnold. You try to develop him. If I'm them, I'm looking at the long, sober reality of the fact that he's had multiple head coaches, multiple coordinators going back to SC and now moving on from Adam Gase. And look at the development of Baker Mayfield. It didn't happen overnight. But the guy has ability. He has high character. It's important to him. And you could come out of this with either Penei Sewell, the great offensive tackle from Oregon, Devontae Smith, who is just an incredible dynamic playmaker, or Don, as you mentioned, maybe you hold that, you know, pick out there and maybe someone falls in love with Zach Wilson of BYU or Justin Fields of Ohio State. I have up to 16 teams needing a quarterback this year. And when I mean that, I'm talking about over the next 2 years. So teams like the Atlanta Falcons, New Orleans Saints, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I think the value of the second pick could be pretty significant. And I think the Jets could be dealing from a position of strength.
All right, before you came on, you know, we read the tweet of Deshaun Watson where he said, you know, his anger was at a 2, now it's at a 10. And everybody that we spoke to said, well, you can't trade this guy. He's that good. But, Mike, you've been in that seat. Could a guy make it so unpleasant, as great as he is, that you've got to make a move?
Boy, that's a really hard question. I would do everything within reason and then some. Not to trade him because, again, you know, the object of the exercise is to acquire Deshaun Watson. High character, productive, young, great ability. I remember talking to Nick Saban a couple of years ago, and he said, you guys, meaning the NFL community, overcomplicate things. We put out more guys on defense than anybody else that play in the NFL on Sundays, and we can't just stop Deshaun Watson. If you go back and look at it, he's really that good. So I understand that he's upset. And if I'm Nick Caserio, the new GM of the Texans, or Cal McNair, the owner, I do anything I have to do to make sure that it's right. Because this is not James Harden where, you know, he's going to come. This is a homegrown talent that he should be the face of your franchise for the next 15 years.
But what if he pulls a Harden? Doesn't play hard, is miserable, yeah. Comes in out of shape. What if he does that?
Yeah, then you probably, if you exhaust all avenues, Mike, then yeah, I think you got to consider it. And then, if I'm Joe Douglas, I'm shipping everything, including that building in Florham Park, to get him and then some. Because if you have Deshaun Watson, Robert Saleh, and, you know, let's just call it for discussions, Michael LaFleur as your coordinator, you have transformed your organization. And if it costs me both ones, both twos, next year's one, so what? Like, you're trying to get that player. And if you can get him and he's under contract and at his age, this guy checks every box. I would give up literally whatever it took within reason to get him.
Now, you mentioned that you were, you know, you would lean toward keeping Sam. And when we had Joe Douglas on last week, you know, I mentioned the fact Sam's got to get paid now if you keep him. Does that come into play?
Somewhat. Now, you know, you could kind of split the baby here a little bit, Mike. You could keep him and not exercise the option. We just saw that most recently in Chicago with Trubisky. That is not ideal. Ideally, if you're going to keep them, you want to think about exercising it, which, again, for our listeners, the rule has changed. If they exercise the fifth-year option, that becomes fully guaranteed. So you're going to make, and that'll be whatever the number is, $25 million and up, depending on some other performance escalators. But the point being is it's a two-year marriage. So you're saying for both the 21 and 22 seasons, Darnold's your quarterback. Now, that's the bad news. The good news is you lock in the numbers, and now you build around them. And, again, maybe you take the tackle. Maybe you take another playmaker, but at least you feel like that position is solidified within reason for two seasons.
Now this week, anything jump at you with these four games this weekend?
Yeah, I think the story of this weekend to me is going to be the greatness of Lamar Jackson against Buffalo. I thought Buffalo had some kinks in the armor, Don. When you look at, they really struggled rushing the passer against the Colts. Now the Colts have a great offensive line, but I think Jackson can make the one or two plays to send the Bills home. And then I think the other storyline is Tampa Bay, because I think Tampa Bay is a much better team than they were when they first played them. And if you take out, you know, the Chicago game, and Chicago's terrible, I think the Saints' trajectory is actually down. So I would not be surprised, guys, to see Tampa Bay winning and maybe Baltimore winning. But to get to the Super Bowl, to me, because of this bye week and with everything with COVID, I think Kansas City and Green Bay have a massive advantage this year.
Do you have any faith that the Browns could keep it close?
I do, because they'll run the ball, and Kevin Stefanski has to manage this game, guys, through the lens of being a head coach and not a play caller. And I think we've seen Kevin evolve as a head coach in his first year. And, you know, Rex Ryan, like, there is a great axiom here, which is if they have the ball in the lead in the second half and they run for 4 yards or more, they should run it again. And those two backs, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, are really good. So I do think they could keep it close, but I just think at the end of the day, there's just too much firepower for Kansas City. And again, this is the first year, guys, that there's only one team that has a bye. And I think when you think about COVID protocols, not traveling, it's just such a big advantage for Green Bay and Kansas City that I just think unless something crazy happens, those are the two teams that will be in the Super Bowl.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Any thoughts on the Urban Meyer hire? I've always felt sort of averse about the big-time college coach going pro. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, Peter, it's not going to happen overnight. We really have to manage expectations here. You know, here's one stat that you need to know. 15-17, that was Nick Saban's record at Miami. And he may go down as the greatest college coach ever, 15-17. So, again, I think he has a chance to be successful. But it's different when you're 18 years old, you're going to look at your head coach one way. When you're 35 and you're getting paid $10, $15 million a year, it's different. And one of the great lessons in my career, guys, when I was working for Coach Parcells in my formative years of my career, he talked almost on a daily basis about who has what money guaranteed, because he said, look, the reality is how you coach a player with guaranteed money is going to be different. Whether that's right or wrong, that's just reality. I think for Coach Meyer, it's not going to happen overnight. Having Trevor Lawrence is obviously a game changer. So I think he'll be successful, and I think there'll be growing pains.
How come Nick Saban wasn't successful? I mean, I know that NFL people respect the heck out of him, and he had the one decent year in Miami, then the bad one, and he left for Alabama. Would he have been successful long-term if he stayed in the NFL?
I think he had a puncher's chance for sure because he's so good, Mike, and he has great emotional intelligence. You know, I was at the game Monday night, and no one will ever talk about this. Jalen Hurts was at the game. This was a guy that transferred out from Alabama. And I thought, like, boy, that says so much about Coach and the relationships that he creates in a meaningful way with his former players, including ones that transferred. And I do think he would have been successful, but, you know, it comes back to the quarterback. And obviously there's now a famous story that, you know, years and years ago, Drew Brees failed a physical going to the Miami Dolphins. And that changed the course of, you know, two franchises. And I think he probably would have been successful, but he went to a place where he could accumulate as many first-round picks as he, you know, as he needs, literally on a year-by-year basis. And again, going back to Peter's question about Urban Meyer, that's the differentiator, which is he's going to have two first-round picks this year, not 10.
Yeah, I also think it's a lot easier to be tough with kids that you're holding their scholarship over their head when the athlete in the NFL holds his contract over your head and is guaranteed money.
Mike, you know what's really interesting about that is when you talk to college coaches now, more of them want to go to the NFL for two reasons. One, name, image, and likeness, meaning that a lot of these players will now get paid, so that's going to change the dynamic. And the transfer protocol, it's a lot easier to transfer. So I totally agree with your point, and that's why college coaches feel like that dynamic is literally changing overnight.
Would Nick Saban at 69 ever take a roll of the dice at the NFL? He looks like he doesn't look 69. He doesn't act it.
Well, that's because he hasn't worked or broadcasted in New York City yet, fellas. So he'll look like 169.
That's true. Look at so, us.
Yeah, or me too. I resemble that comment as well. But I would say this, guys, that I think he'll retire there because I think there's a part of Coach Saban that we don't get to see often, which is a nurturing, earnest side to him, that he's really impacting people where he is. And although you would never say never, I think he's pretty fulfilled. I don't know that, but just watching him, listening to him, my gut feeling is he stays there.
And I always try to figure out, like, how do you determine whether he's just a really good recruiter or a great coach? Because when I watch that game, it just seems like he just got way more talent than anybody else he plays.
Yeah, I think he's a great coach. I mean, you go back to the early 90s and where he was a defensive coordinator under Coach Belichick and those Browns defenses. And everywhere he's been, from Michigan State, LSU, he's been very successful. So does he have the best players? No question. But I think one of the things, Don, he does a great job of is player development, and that is part of coaching. Devontae Smith came in as an undersized player, and he just got better and better. And, you know, there's just countless examples. One year at the Dolphins, we drafted Kenyon Drake, who is a little bit of a change of pace back. And from day one, he could catch, he could pass for tech. He does a great job of coaching the details, and that's why so many players are drafted. NFL teams know exactly what they're getting when they're getting an Alabama player.
All right, who's going to the Super Bowl before we let you go? Who are you picking?
I got to go with Kansas City and Green Bay. I just think the deck is stacked too much in their favor, with the asterisk of Lamar Jackson. I just think he's a great equalizer, and that 48-yard run last week, guys, was, you know, that changed the game with Tennessee. So I'm staying with the two favorites unless Lamar does something crazy.
Isn't it amazing, though, Mike? And we're talking with Mike Tannenbaum here on the Michael Kay Show. Lamar Jackson, a week ago today, people were, well, he can't win the big game. He lost two playoff games, can't win the big game, and now you're in mad love with him.
Well, again, I don't think he's perfect. I think some of his throws still need to be much more consistent, especially outside the numbers, 20 yards down the field or more, and I think that's why the field gets crowded on him. But when you look at how closely these games are played, he just has the ability. Go back to the game against Cleveland in Cleveland. You know, he comes out of the bathroom on fourth down, and he makes one play to change the game. And that's why I'm saying, like, he needs to get better, but while he's developing, he can change the game. And I promise you this, how can Buffalo play man-to-man? That defense played really well last week for Tennessee. They played one of the few times they were man-to-man. Their backs are turned to the line of scrimmage. He breaks contain, and it's over. And that's why, you know, they see so many zones where you can have seven defenders watch him literally the whole time. If you turn your back to the line of scrimmage and he runs, that's what can happen.
Great stuff. Enjoy the weekend, Mike. Thank you for coming on.
I appreciate it, guys. And I think today's a good day in Jetland. So good to be with you.
All right. There you go.
Thanks,
so,
Mike.
There's a guy who knows the NFL very well, and he likes the Jet higher. And, you know, I've yet to see. I'm looking at all the people in football that I follow on Twitter and reading all the stories. And, again, I understand what Don said. You can't say it's a home run, although, you know, Dan Orlovsky did. But the initial returns, you know, before the mail-in votes are counted, have the Jets as a winner right now.
It doesn't have that same feel. Like with Gase, we were like, oh, he just got fired in Miami. I don't see what Peyton Manning claims to see. It wasn't like his offenses were great. Like, people are throwing solid defensive stats out about how great that San Francisco defense was despite all the injuries. And outside of that 1 year in Denver with the greatest quarterback maybe ever to play, Gase's numbers were all very pedestrian, if not below average offensively, in the places where he coached. So, you know, we didn't bash the Gase hire, but there was enough curiosity to, I don't know where this is coming from. Maybe it looks like they're putting a lot of faith in Peyton Manning. And this one just feels like this is a good coach who comes from a good organization, and it's a Joe Douglas hire. And that's something that I think even the most pessimistic Jet fan feels like they've got the right guy at general manager. So I think that's the difference. I have faith in this hire. It may not work because it's still a crapshoot sometimes when it comes down to who can translate into being a great coach. We've got guys that were assistants forever that were terrific assistants.
Nah.
So as bad as Ray Hanley was, he was a great assistant on a championship Giant team. Couldn't be a head coach. Richie Pettibone forever in Washington wasn't a good head coach. You know, so there's a transition to be made there. But finally, it's a hire the Jets have made instead of asking somebody else for help.
I tell you what, all they need is, you know, consistent defense, some real weapons, and to figure out who their starting quarterback is. And we got something to talk about here.
It's going to be really interesting to see. I mean, we'll talk to Coach Sala sometime next week when the Jets announce him. I don't think they'll announce on Monday because it's Martin Luther King Day. So we're aiming for Tuesday. And that's the key question. Every single program in the NFL lives and dies on what type of quarterback they have. Is that quarterback going to be Sam Darnold? Or do you have enough faith in the two people after Trevor Lawrence to pick one of them and say they're better? Or can you go after Deshaun Watson?
Now, I'm not trying to say that I'm not excited to talk to him, because I think we can get a lot in terms of figuring out the kind of guy he is, and certainly coming off a Gase man. Jets fans just want to hear someone who seems normal and capable of communicating, which is what fans essentially need from a head coach. I mean, it's the front-facing piece of an organization. However, when it comes to that question about Sam Darnold, I can give you the verbatim on what it will be. I mean, we live in an era, I don't know if it was ever not like this, but since I've been here, asking a the new head coach what he thinks about the quarterback who exists there, it feels like, whether the guy's Tom Brady or Taylor Heineke, you never get an answer on what they really think.
Yeah, but that's why we make the big money, because we have to interpret his answer.
Right. We have to break it down to a fine powder.
Well, you make the big money.
Man, this is a guy that he has seen this guy play. He's seen film on Darnold during the course of his career.
And really out-schemed him completely this year, made him look terrible.
But this isn't somebody that this isn't a college coach, or this isn't somebody that, you know, was an offensive coordinator that didn't face the Jets, that, you know, that maybe didn't have a working knowledge. He's still going to have to look at a lot of film and all that, but he kind of knows what kind of quarterback Sam Darnold is. And you're right, Peter, he's not going to come right out and say we're keeping him, we're getting rid of him. But you could hear, oh, we're open to other things, we're going to see, it's going to be competitive, all those things will be said, but doesn't mean that we can't interpret how he puts it.
I'm going to predict a couple of key phrases. Gonna watch tape.
One Sam, downhill.
Sam does a lot of things really well. Really impressed with his leadership, and he seems like a great young man. Excited to get the opportunity to talk to Sam and get to know him a bit. I think those are all you can guarantee.
Now, Don, did you just say about a minute ago, crapshoot?
Yes.
All right, let's go to John Tush on the phone. John Tush!
Well done, Michael. Beautifully done.
What do you have, John?
Hey, guys.
How are you?
What's up?
I'm doing great. I got two things for you guys. First thing, Peter, you are looking unbelievable, especially on Wednesday when you had the black shirt and the black tie with the white in it. You look like $1 million.
Thank you. I'm back in black today. I appreciate that. That's very kind of you, Mr. Tush.
Yeah, I'm not watching today. I'm listening. But I do have to take you to task on something. How do you give someone's theme song away?
Whoa. Hold on here, John Tush.
Farts are so funny.
The man happens to have a nickname that has to do with passing gas. This is the only song we have in that realm. And I'll be honest, John, if we keep it a buck, you don't call that often.
Wow.
I don't think you give someone's theme song away. I'm very, very upset with that.
You know, I think, John, you're right.
Yeah.
Call us often as Spike or Ira, and then let's have a conversation. You know what I mean, John?
I got to make a living.
Well, John, we thank you for calling. Play him out. Would you please, Anthony? Would you play him? Thank you, John.
Thank you, guys.
It's the last one that really resonates.
Yeah, that's the sloppy one. Check out Marvel Studios' WandaVision. I'm going to do it tonight. Marvel Studios' first original series is streaming now, only on Disney Plus. We've got Marvel Vision, and then we've got King of Staten Island.
I'm going to watch One Night in Miami.
Oh, I want to watch that
this weekend.
I don't know if it's a date night movie. I don't know if Jody would be that interested in that one.
Really? But Jody's a nerd. It's like historical fiction.
Yeah, but there's a lot of sports involved too. There's two sports figures, so I'm not sure. She's not a big sports fan.
True.
1-800-919-3776. That's the number. James Harden met with the Nets press today. And had some interesting things to say. We'll check in on that as well. You're watching us on Yes, and you're listening on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.